A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Larry Lesser. Well, the week's work is over for most of us. There's a weekend of fun ahead. If you drive, make sure it is fun. Fill up with Amoco gas. There's nothing like it to make your engine do its best. You'll take the hills in high. You'll cruise evenly, quietly. You'll get where you're going with less bother and fuss, and you'll do it at less cost, too. Because Amoco gas is actually cheaper by the mile. There's nothing like Amoco gas. And now, Larry Lesser with the news.
Good evening, everyone. Here's what happened today. A powerful North Korean offensive developing all along the line in Korea tonight. Front dispatches indicate that at least 45,000 of the enemy are involved, possibly as many as 90,000. The North Koreans began their attack under cover of darkness. It was paced by tanks. They hit first at the center of our line above and below Yangdong. There's no indication, however, that the North Koreans have made much progress so far. We're apparently standing firm, taking the blows as they come. For hours before the attack started, units of the 1st Cavalry Division were subjected to a relentless artillery bombardment. Heavy rains prevented our Air Force from getting in any effective blows. Then, taking advantage of the weather, the North Koreans began to move. They outnumber the 1st Cavalry units 4-1. But the only significant gain made by the enemy so far has been above Yangdong. That's in the center of the line, about 90 miles above our beachhead at Busan. The North Koreans have succeeded in driving a small wedge in our lines there. But headquarters says we're now holding and are trying to close the breach. Earlier today, a spokesman at General MacArthur's headquarters painted this picture of the new developments. The enemy is striking while our planes are being hampered by bad weather. They are expending a heavy amount of manpower and equipment, maybe seeking a quick do-or-die decision. With supplies running out, the North Koreans are taking the offensive in the hope of knocking us out before reinforcements can be brought in. This is the other side of the picture as seen by Army spokesmen. There is nothing from headquarters to suggest any cause for pessimism or despair. We are not going to hold on to ground if it means sacrificing too many men. We are now convinced that we won't be thrown out of Korea. It may be a week or two before the line becomes stabilized. But even if we do fall back farther, we can still defend our beachhead at Busan. By falling back, we will be shortening our lines, allowing us to concentrate manpower over a smaller area. So much for the military situation. As for our general mobilization at home, President Truman tonight asked more money for stockpiling critical materials. Just 2 days ago, the Munitions Board reported that so far it had been able to complete only 38% of its planned stockpiling. It said it had no hopes of reaching even its minimum goal until 1953. So the President has requested another $600 million for this purpose. At the same time, he asked Congress for $18 million to repair units of the reserve fleet in the event it's needed. The Senate also approved, without debate, $13 billion in defense funds. This is part of the so-called single package appropriation bill. The measure passed the Senate in less than 10 minutes. Representative Vinson, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, says the Army will increase its strength from some 500,000 to more than 750,000. This doesn't mean, however, that the additional 250,000 men will all be draftees. Some of the slack will be made up from reserve and National Guard outfits. The National Security Resources Board has asked for a step-up in the production of synthetic rubber. And on the advice of the board, the President has ordered an increase in our yearly output from 400,000 tons to 675,000 tons. And several plants are expected to be operating by the 1st of December. Mr. Truman discussed home front mobilization with his cabinet this morning. This while the Senate Banking Committee took up his request for limited controls. Several senators on the committee, among them Ives of New York and Sparkman of Alabama, expressed considerable interest in Bernard Baruch's proposal for all-out controls now. But while the committee was trying to make up its mind, Chairman Maybank received a telephone call from Mr. Baruch. He said the elder statesman suggested that Congress waste no more time arguing the merits of his proposals, that it give the president what he asked for, but with the addition of standby price, wage, and rationing controls, to be used by the president if needed. This, Mr. Baruch said, is the minimum requirement now. He insists he's not changed his mind on the need for all-out mobilization. The committee will try to reach a decision on it Monday. Nobody at the United Nations is ready to say with any certainty what's behind Russia's decision to return to the Security Council. But when the Council meets on Tuesday, we may learn some of the answers. Our deputy representative to the UN, Ambassador Gross, told newsmen today, "We don't know what Soviet intentions are, but we know what we must do." This was an apparent reference to Korea. I'd like to discuss this matter with you in a moment. In Britain, Parliament is adjourned until October 17th, with the Labour government still holding on, despite its slim 6-vote majority. Meantime, the British Defence Ministry has alerted a limited number of reserves, told them to be ready for a call to active duty. The men are being called up as a result of Britain's decision to send a fighting force to Korea. And in Belgium, there was more demonstrations today protesting the return of King Leopold to the throne. Street riots took place in Brussels, the Belgian cabinet remaining in almost continuous session, and 5,000 Belgian soldiers have been recalled from occupation duties in Germany to help maintain order there. The government acknowledges a very critical situation. Well, the price story in this country is following a now familiar theme. The government reported today that the wholesale index on 28 sensitive commodities went up nearly 4% last week, a 13% jump over the last week preceding the Korean War. Meat prices, however, are down slightly, but farm prices have gone up 6.5% in the past 30 days. The head of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, has called upon all Americans to help his agency check on subversive activities. Mr. Hoover warns, however, that the FBI is looking only for factual information. It does not want malicious gossip, gossip which could lead to witch hunts and do incalculable harm to innocent people. Simultaneously, Attorney General McGrath announced he's ordered one or more federal grand juries to stand by in Washington. He wants them ready at all times to take whatever action might be required in cases of subversive activity. The Federal Security Administrator, Oscar Ewing, appeared before the House Lobbying Committee today to answer some questions. The committee was particularly interested to know whether Mr. Ewing had used any government funds to promote compulsory health insurance. Mr. Ewing denied that he ever did, but he told the committee, "I have not only every right, but every duty to put pressure on Congress to pass administration programs." Well, Joe Lewis is going to return to the ring. After giving up the heavyweight title 2 years ago, Lewis said today he wants another crack at it. He'd like to fight Ezzard Charles in September, either in New York or Chicago. Lewis said he's returning to boxing because he owes the government heavy income tax money. And world's champion Charles says he has no particular desire to meet Lewis. Well, Russia has opened up a second front, a diplomatic one. Naturally, there's wild speculation over Russia's dramatic decision to return to the United Nations Security Council. The speculation runs the full gamut from war to peace, ranging from a peace move in Korea to establishment of a cover for a new communist aggression elsewhere. But nobody knows, and it's unlikely that anyone will until the black limousine of the Soviet delegation draws up before that former factory at Lake Success, where the Sperry Gyroscope people still make bomb sites at the other end. Russia's heavyset Mr. Malik is maintaining the usual Soviet silence. Yesterday, he simply telephoned Secretary General Lee of his decision to return and said the agenda for Tuesday's meeting would be communicated later. Now, as chairman of the Council for the month of August, the Soviet delegate has the right to announce the agenda, although it must be voted upon by the rest of the Council. That's usually a formality, but this time it may not be. The tip-off will come when Mr. Malik announces that agenda. If he says, "We will discuss the situation in Korea," then there's a strong possibility that he will suggest mediation of the conflict on Russia's own terms, of course. But on the other hand, Malik may say, "We will talk about the Chinese situation," this being what his boss, Premier Stalin, said about 10 days ago in his answer to India's offer of mediation. Stalin then said, in effect, that he would welcome mediation if communist China were first admitted to the Security Council. And in Russia, there's a tendency to follow the boss's directives. Naturally, the two subjects are connected, since it was nationalist China which cast the 7th vote condemning the aggression in Korea. And anyone who knows the Russian legalistic mind knows that they must do some talking about their unexpected return, since it's a flat contradiction of the last recorded statements by Mr. Malik, when 29 weeks ago on July 13th, he strode out of the council chamber saying Russia would not participate as long as nationalist China remained a member. So his return Tuesday will require some explaining. And it is this explaining which worries the other delegates, the United States included. They are reported to have spent a good part of the day going over the wording of their decisions on Korea. on the lookout for any legal loopholes which the Russians might try to exploit. So if it seems likely the Russian chairman opens the meeting with a reference to China, then the war will continue. For unless Soviet Russia has been able to work out some secret diplomacy among those we count upon as our allies, she still won't be able to command enough votes to expel nationalist China. And knowing this, one is led to an inevitable assumption that Russia's main reason for interrupting its more than 6 month boycott is to try to break up the United Nations front in Korea, that they are worried about the solid world front against them, and that they'll turn on the propaganda spouts to try to break it up, believing, as the Soviets always do, that their insidious propaganda can divide the free peoples from their governments. And now there's always the grim possibility that the Soviet Union will try to block the UN from forcefully intervening against Kremlin-inspired aggressions in other corners of the world. The Russians are a military nation. In fact, the whole communist system is one of complete mobilization of its people. Some of us may have once thought it was for purposes of raising the pathetic Russian standard of living. Now we know it's organized for making war, just like Hitler's Nazism. Well, just as in the army, Russia's people have no choice where they will live or where they will work. Those who object are treated like army deserters sent to a concentration or work camp. Because the Russians are a military nation, it's impossible to divide the military picture in Korea from their coming action at the UN. To them, it's just another front. As we know tonight, the North Koreans have pinned us back against our beachhead in a mighty offensive, and the Soviet move at the UN might well be designed to coincide with it. If it's a peace move, the Russians will demand the harshest bargaining terms. We recall that when the Russians surrounded Budapest in the last war, they sent in emissaries under a white flag to demand the German surrender. The Germans shot them. And we know now what happened to Budapest. And that is what the Russians may be trying to threaten at the UN beachheads in Korea and Lake Success. This is Larry Lesser in New York. And now, Bob Dixon.
Had your vacation this year?
Yes.
Well, then you had a swell time, I'll bet. Took the family to the mountains or the seashore? Well, anyway, the family car sure got a hard workout. While you enjoyed your vacation, that car worked harder than it does all year. And now it needs, no, not a vacation, but an after-vacation checkup by your Amoco man. Tires still okay? Battery low on water? Crankcase oil all dirty from dusty roads? Chassis full of squeaks that mean lubricants have been melted or squeezed out? Well, your Amoco man can take care of all that. He'll put your car back in A-number-1 shape. Tires checked, battery serviced, old oil drained, and new fresh Permalube motor oil put in, chassis all fixed up with Amoco-approved lubricants. Your car will have a new lease on life and be ready to take you wherever you want to go, with troubles left behind. Here's Mr. Lesser with a footnote to today's news.
We've all heard stories of hard-pressed troops being supplied from the air. I remember in 1944 when British paratroops were surrounded in Holland. They sent a patrol through the lines in a desperate attempt to rescue an airborne package, and it had fallen in no man's land. When they dragged it back and opened it, they found it contained Christmas tree ornaments. In Korea today, troopers of the 1st Cavalry Division cheered when their PX supplies arrived at the front. The first box they opened contained a bugle. And that's my footnote to tonight's news.
It's tragic to have to say this, but this may be the last time some of our listeners will ever hear my voice. I'll be here Monday, but they won't. They'll just be names on an accident casualty list. Don't get on that list. Keep your eyes on the road. Keep control of your car. Obey the traffic rules. And above all, make sure your car is safe to drive. Take it to your Amoco man. He'll give it a good going over. It's a great precaution. Listen Monday to Larry Lesser. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.